Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio. 9:04 on the clock. Have your host, James J. I am joined by Seth Habager.
Good morning, everyone.
We got some fun stuff to get into this hour. We're going to touch on the movie stereotypes we're the most sick of.
Oh, good.
We've got that one.
Ready.
We're going to catch up with our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater and talk about The Odd Couple a little bit.
Okay.
And we got some That Ain't Right stories. A woman who was arrested for faking a kidnapping. And a man. We got another one about men here that's pretty funny, too. Along with some good stories of the day as well. And plenty more fun stuff lined up for you. So let's kick it off in our entertainment section, Seth. And we're actually going to start with talking about Eminem.
Oh, okay.
The rapper, not the candy.
Yes, just, let's be very clear about that.
Although rapper and candy also are very, they have other...
Candy rapper.
Yeah. How has he not come out with a candy yet?
I know, what's up with that?
It's all right there for him. He's already got like a mom spaghetti thing that he does, like where he sells spaghetti or something. So like, why not? Go all out. Here's how you can tell that Eminem has pretty much done it all. This reminds me a bit of Snoop Dogg a bit. Or Willie Nelson or Dolly Parton or these kind of crossover artists that are able to, you know, have hits in multiple layers. Eminem just scored a number one hit.
Okay.
Not a big deal. He's had a couple of
He's had those, yeah.
Has his first one on the Hot Christian Songs chart. For those that don't know, Snoop Dogg also has a best-selling religious album as well.
I remember hearing about that one, yeah.
Now, it's not technically his song, which makes it a little bit easier to interesting. It's the DJ Khaled track, Use This Gospel, which is a remix, which he's on with Kanye West. So it's Eminem and Kanye with DJ Khaled. Khaled. Eminem's lines on the track are biblical in a bit, has some of that to it. So it does have, it's not as if he isn't talking, you know, about God or Jesus or any of those things.
Yeah.
So it does hit the terms for it. It's just still shocking. It's still a little
weird.
It's a little weird. But every artist under the sun, especially musicians, have wanted to be the Beatles. They want to go from I Want to Hold Your Hand to Sgt. Pepper. Every artist, every musician, I shouldn't say every musician, the majority of them want to be. For every musician like that, though, there is a AC/DC, a band like that that, you know, doesn't really change what they're doing. They like what they're doing, so they're not going to change it.
Yeah, it's very popular, too, so why not?
Yeah, right. But there's also plenty of other artists like this that where they're just trying to, they want to do different things. They want to expand and try different stuff. I just can't believe that this happened.
You know, it's very remarkable.
It's one thing to do a Christian song or be on a Christian album. It's another to have a hit there, like for it to do well.
Yes. Wow. Wow.
And I don't know, of all the music genres, the one I know least about is Christian rock or Christian music or anything else.
Yep.
But I've talked to some people about this, and so many of that fan base are dying for more pop artists to do more of these songs.
Yes, it is. The problem with the Christian rock genre is it tends to be very homogeneous in terms of sound.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it sounds the same. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting something like this, Kanye West, Eminem, hip hop.
It's different.
That's different. And I think a lot of people are wanting to hear that difference. They want more variety in the kind of music that they listen to. They still want the message or whatever, you know, that part of it, but they want to listen to different kinds of styles. They want to listen to different things. So
because as long as there are record producers and record companies, that you're never going to get rid of like categorization because it's part of how they make their money, part of how they market their stuff and everything.
Nail on the head,
but I don't think as far as fans are concerned, it's becoming less and less you're going to run into the person, I only listen to this style of music.
Mm-hmm.
Like more and more you're getting people of like, what kind of music you like? Oh, I like everything. You know, I like everything but this. Like, that's the common answer you get nowadays. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we were kids, I think it was a little more direct.
You're absolutely right, because when we were kids, it was your country folk, your R&B hip hop folk, your hard rock, heavy metal folk, and never the twain shall meet at that point. But now it is very much, I mean, so people like us, because I'm guessing you were like me, you tended to have a wider taste when you were in a teenager in your 20s, because I did too. And that was kind of weird back then. You're like, really? Oh, you like all these kinds of music?
Said,
yeah. But that, you're right, is much more common these days than it was back then.
It's kind of interesting, I think, that to how this goes and how we see we're going to see less and less of category. Like this artist, this is this. You're going to see much more, I think, of the Taylor Swifts, the people maybe get their start in one genre, but that's not where they kind of end their career necessarily.
No, they tend to evolve and change, and that's good though. I'm glad artists can do that, because otherwise it'd get kind of boring.
It also maybe gets rid of a lot of the one hit wonder factor. You know, if you look at like a Darius Rucker could have had his musical career kind of all said and done, even just as a solo artist, with just the Hootie and the Blowfish thing.
Right.
But he goes and he doesn't have a great solo career as a pop artist, but then he goes into country, I believe his first love. And man, he's a household name now.
Now, like, what happened?
He's no longer Hootie. People aren't asking him if he's Hootie anymore.
If his name is Hootie.
Yeah, they oh, we know your name now.
Wait. Hey, Hootie!
Not to say this happens a lot, but it does, you know, it's more common now than ever for it to happen.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. 100%.
One of the greatest in the game, Tom Hanks, has been in the news recently for something kind of interesting and something that he's gotten a little bit of pushback on, but I actually support him wholeheartedly on this. Tom Hanks does not do a lot of sequels. That's by design. He says, quote, "A smart thing I did is I've never signed a contract that had a contractual obligation to a sequel. I've always said, guys, if there's a reason to do it, let's do it. But you guys can't force me. You can't make me."
I see no problem with that at all.
There is no need to do a Forrest Gump Part 2. Is no need to do Philadelphia Part 2.
That would be weird.
Probably wouldn't be in it.
No.
But, you know, there's
his ghost.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. The man with one red shoe. We don't need to know how that second end of the movie.
No, we're fine.
Splash. We didn't need a sequel to Splash. You know, that kind of thing.
I think there was, but he wasn't in it.
Actually was. Yeah, that's right. I caught myself as soon as I was saying it. There is this quote. There is that natural inclination that is one of pure commerce that says, hey, you just had a hit, so do it again, and you'll have a hit. Tom just doesn't agree with that, though. He doesn't believe that that's the case.
Yep.
And history will kind of add to what he's saying.
May bear that out, yes.
Most sequels do not do nearly as well as the original. For every Godfather 2, there is et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how many sequels are bad? Like
Saw Part 17 or whatever they're up to now.
I believe they have 95 Friday the 13th movies. I'm pretty sure they're up to 95.
Yeah, at this point they are.
Tom also admitted that years after Forrest Gump came out, they did entertain the idea of a sequel, but the talks only lasted about 40 minutes. And then it was done.
That was it.
Yeah. What are we doing here?
Let's think. No, we're not doing that.
That's so old school, and I don't pretend to put that on young artists or actors or anything like that. Get your money. Get your paycheck. Actors don't have a retirement plan. Get as much work as you can.
Yes, yes. Do all the sequels you can.
But I do admire the actor that can. They have the clout. They have the stature.
Yeah, right.
They have the money, quite frankly, to be able to do this.
Yeah,
I have no issue with it. I would love to be able to do something like that.
To be fair to Tom Hanks, he did that when he was not yet Tom Hanks.
Right.
That was his kind of thing. He's like, let's not do that. But now, I mean, look what happened to him. He was fine.
It worked out for Tom.
It worked out okay for him.
I don't think I would necessarily be against doing sequels or any of those things if I like the script. But the problem for that is the script that even a Tom Hanks, he may not have to audition for her. I don't know the last audition Tom Hanks really did. Oh, wait a minute. I do, actually. He auditioned for the Colonel in the Elvis movie.
He had to audition for that.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have to audition very often.
No.
But whether he's auditioning or not, Tom gets a script. He's that kind of actor. He'll get a first draft.
Yep.
But that's just it. It's the first draft. The script that he's seen for Elvis or for any movie that he's got in the works is nothing like what he's going to end up doing when the cameras are rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
When it comes to that, you may get that sequel and, wow, this is a cool idea, like the concept. And by the time the film is being made, you get on set and all your sheets are pink because that's the most current change. They change the colors of the script sheets when there's
an update.
So you
don't get confused, yeah.
Yeah, so 90% of your script might have like pink pages and like a couple of white ones where they didn't change anything. So then you're like, oh, what did I just sign up for? This is a disaster. And to this end, you have a Sandra Bullock. Now, Sandra Bullock is one of the classiest actors in the game and always has been. You have never heard anybody say a bad word about Sandra Bullock. She's a fantastic actress. I would work with her in a heartbeat. I would be an extra in a movie just to be on set with her. I have a lot of respect for Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock has done something in recent years that is very out of character and very weird for her, where it comes up in almost every audition, especially the looser the audition gets. Hey, what's a role you didn't like? Hey, what's a role you wish you hadn't done? People love asking actors that because they like to put them on the spot and get a little bit of a headline of like, oh, they trash talk this movie or whatever.
Yeah.
And 90% of actors will never answer this. Mm-hmm. They'll always give you a generic answer. Well, you know, every role you take, you believe in at the time and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares. Sandra Bullock, who has always been pretty, you know, again, classy, but also very, this is me, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. Cannot stand Speed 2. She has no idea why she signed up for that. She just no clue. Just a young actor, didn't get the script on time and signed on to it, you know, and all this. And
sight unseen, yeah.
She rips on that movie like I've never seen an actor rip on a movie before. Like, oh, I haven't seen a lot of
right.
that is. You get that sometimes, you know, where it actually kind of slowed her career down at the time.
Yes.
Which is really weird that a movie named Speed would slow an actor's career down.
That's actually kind of cool.
That's kind of funny.
It's interesting, though. I love it when actors do. I mean, it's usually a film that's almost universally disliked. You know, they say, why did you sign up? Halle Berry, why did you sign up for Catwoman?
Right.
Because my agent is a terrible person.
Right.
I think is what she said. You
yes,
know?
It is. Yes, basically yes, exactly what she said. Yeah.
But which is funny. I find that very humorous that they can own being like, you know, yeah, probably maybe I should have done that. But at the same time, have some fun with it. Why not?
We're going to get more and more looks behind the curtain like this.
I think so.
From actors, especially the younger actors, your Timothée Chalamets and stuff, who are very take me as I am.
Exactly.
You know, kind of thing.
The way they should be, actually. Yeah.
One of the things that we're very excited about is a new season of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater main stage productions. They kick things off with The Odd Couple, the Neil Simon classic, a fantastic written play, so good that they have not had to really adapt or change it. This concept
amazing
still stands to this day. I know it was a couple of years back, but so much so that they even re-brought the show back with Thomas Lennon and Matthew Perry. And it had a couple of seasons.
Yep.
It did okay. Mm-hmm. So even, I mean, it just speaks to the popularity not only of the concept, the show, but the writing of Neil Simon.
Mm.
The most current play is cast. They are auditioning right now, and our own Seth Habhagger is in it, along with our own Heather.
That's right.
Our sales department. And we're very excited about this. Wanted to catch up with Seth and see how things are going over there.
Things are going very well. We are really enjoying ourselves on stage, getting our everything set up, all of our blocking and things. So this is going to be a wonderful mix of new and old people that are in the show. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned Heather, of course, this is the first time she's going to be with us at WRCT.
Way to be, Heather.
A couple of other people, there'll be people you'll recognize, people who have been in a lot of productions as well. And it's a great mix there. We've got a great director, Gretchen. We've got some new people helping out with props. Wonderful, the set is coming together right now. It's looking great. It's going to be a fabulous show, as long as I learn all my lines, and that's the important thing. So no, I'm just kidding.
Well, to be fair to you, Seth, because I've worked with you enough to know how good you are at memorization. You did kind of come into the game a little bit late. The actor that was going to be playing Oscar Madison, really, you know, a real jerk, and stepped away, and you had to step in, and that was awfully cool of you to do that. I'm proud of you, and I'm really admiring you. Not only are you doing it, but what you're going to be able to do with Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel taking on a character like that, though, that is so established, so well-known? And not many of us, we talked about this when I was going to play Oscar and everything, the Walter Matthau factor. Like, there's only one. There's only one Walter. There's only one Matthau. It's the same thing with Felix. There's only one Jack Lemmon. I mean, how have you been working the character?
For me, actually, Oscar is the easier of the two, if you ask me, between the two main characters, Oscar and Felix. Felix has to be a very specific, you know, type. Not necessarily the person who's casted him, but you have to do it a certain way because Felix is very boom, boom, boom. You know, he's like this, he's like this. You have more room to go with Oscar a little bit. Yeah, he's a slob and all these things. But he is not, to me, he's the easier part to play, because you do have some more leeway. Now, having said all that, You know, Walter Matthau, I mean, one of my all-time favorite actors.
Yeah.
The man could do stuff with his face.
Oh, my God.
That he had the rubber face, and he could make these expressions that I still love. I want to... There's a couple of scenes that I do in there where I want to do, and I'm probably not going to do it very well because I don't have a face like him, is to just do an homage to him.
Yes.
The Walter Matthau closed mouth smile.
Yeah, yeah.
Is one of my favorite facial expressions of all time.
Yeah,
and there's a couple of things where I try to, you know, not copy, but, you know, do a little, you know, do a little honor to Mr. Yeah. Matthau when I do the smile, the closed mouth smile. But other than that, I'm not, you know, trying to do like Jack Klugman. I'm not trying to do like Matthew Perry. I'm just trying to see, you know, where do I see this character as, and go with it from there. So.
You were working alongside the executive over at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, Tim Young.
Yep.
We've both been on stage many times with Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy working with Tim. Mm-hmm. He's a great actor.
Yep.
He's such a prepared actor.
Mm-hmm.
And you take a lot of confidence in that. How is the chemistry going with you two? You guys already had so much to go on.
Right.
Has that been... easy to kind of fall back into or taking a little work?
It has. We already know when we've done the Felix and Oscar scenes together, we feel very comfortable.
Good.
You can tell. It's just that there's just a real comfort level between the two of us doing these two roles. And it's we're having fun with it. That's what you do. We're playing around with it. So.
I cannot wait. I am going to be right there. I'm going to be try to be in the front. So just catching people up, and I realized this yesterday talking to Phil because Phil hadn't heard, and Phil's a pretty consistent listener of ours. So maybe just touch on this again and not spend a lot of time on it. Had to pull back from the role myself because of my having some mental fatigue. My brain has had a couple of concussions that I've never let it heal from. I've just going into this weekend, Monday, Tuesday, bit yesterday are the first days that I've started to feel somewhat normal in my we're talking about my brain, so it's never going to
be normal.
Yeah, my normal. I'm just starting to get that back.
Yes.
Just starting to feel it. So it actually was the right call. Seem like it was the right thing to do as far as my brain goes. I'm still very, very angry at myself and very frustrated with this. And I'll be completely honest with you, Seth. You know how I feel about that company, WRCT. You know how I feel about you, Tim, Heather, you know, Gretchen, the whole cast.
Right.
I genuinely like everybody in that cast. I wasn't sure if I was going to go see it. This is very difficult for me.
Yep.
I cannot express. I don't think people quite understand as much as I ramble what this world means to me.
Yes.
What matters more to me, though, is supporting you guys. So I will be there. I will be cheering you on. I will be your biggest cheerleader. And I cannot tell you how proud I am of this cast, Gretchen, the director. It is going to be a good show. I've heard nothing but good things about the rehearsal process.
Yep.
We encourage you to get your tickets at wrctheater.org. Wrctheater.org is where you can get those tickets. And you can get them also the day of. And that day of is October 7th. That'll be the premiere for The Odd Couple and kick off the WRCT season.
Yes.
This show is already cast. We got a lot of people. I don't know if they're still looking for volunteers, but I encourage you to reach out to WRCT to find out.
If not this show, then future shows for sure.
Right, because the seasonal Christmas show, Miracle on 34th Street, that'll be in December. A Streetcar Named Desire, classic, that'll be in
Tennessee
March.
Tennessee Williams, yeah.
And The Curious Savage, that'll be in May. That's the one I'm looking forward to.
That's a little different one, yeah.
I was told by then I should be okay memorizing again.
Yes.
And everything. It's tempting, Streetcar, because it's Streetcar.
Any Tennessee Williams play is very tempting, yes.
But realistically, that's probably when I'll be back on live theater. But I've got some auditions coming up and some things that I'm very lucky that I don't film until next year that I'm
so
doing.
So you can recover, more of that recovery time. Yeah,
but absolutely. It's also, it's given me a chance to still like salvage some pride because I'm very, very mad at myself about the whole thing. We want you to be at this show, spread the word about this show and the good work that WRCT is doing and really all your local theaters, wherever you're listening to us, support local theater.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take a break, wrap up our entertainment news with that, but we do still have to get into movie stereotypes we're sick of.
All right.
Coming up on Mornings on WFHR. Welcome back to Mornings on WFHR. Seth and James here with you at 9:26 on the clock, and we're going to dive into movie stereotypes we are tired of.
I'm ready.
Hollywood relies heavily on stereotypes, and frankly, some of them need to go away.
Please.
A poll of people aged 18 to 35 determined the top 10 stereotypes we are tired of. And keep that in mind, the 18 to 35.
Yeah, I think that's younger audience.
It's an interesting part of this. We got a top six here, even though there's 10. Many of them were tied.
Okay.
So we'll start from the bottom up. So there's a two-way tie between number six. Disabled people appearing frail, helpless, or unintelligent. 16% of people in that age group are tired of seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
I agree.
Agreed.
100%. Okay.
Tied with that is overprotective Asian parents at 16%. That tired stereotype.
Yes, please, yeah. Please. We've done that. It's been played out.
I will say this. I think it is a little different when you see, like, an Asian artist, an Asian creator creating a show, and you see an Asian mom like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oftentimes that is not so much stereotypical as autobiographical.
Yeah, based in reality, on their own experiences, right?
I think of the show Miss Marvel, where they had a very heavy Pakistani Indian writing crew, directors,
yep.
All that, really, really went all out on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a very stereotypical Indian mother on the show,
yep.
Played by a wonderful Indian actress,
yep.
Who reminded me so more than any other actor I've ever seen, mm-hmm. of my mother, like my Jewish mother, this Indian Pakistani woman.
Yes.
Like, so much reminded me of her.
It's amazing because you think, wow, maybe this is just kind of a mother thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter where they're from? Maybe all creeds and ethnicities,
right.
Have moms that are like that.
Tied for number five, the streetwise, sassy black woman. 17% of people are sick of that. Along with on the other side of the spectrum, flamboyant members of the LGBTQ community. 17% on that.
Dude.
Stereotypes in general.
Yeah.
The characterizations, mm-hmm. of characters, it's been dying out for a long time.
It has. It's been a slow death, but it's been going, yeah.
Whether they agree with this or not, Hollywood, quote-unquote Hollywood, and I hate it when people do this. I do it all the time, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Hollywood is a city, and yeah, they've got a lot of, like, companies there and stuff. Very little of the film, like, the percentage of the film world done in Hollywood is actually a lot smaller than I think people realize.
Yes, anymore. That's true.
But let's just say the powers that be, the people, the producers, the casting, mm-hmm. directors, a lot of the people in charge of this stuff, in order for them to keep their jobs, they're going to be correcting a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because if people aren't going to go support these movies, people,
yep.
aren't going to go see these movies. And that's when heads roll. The way you make change, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, money. How does it affect their money? Now, you want to protest against a sports or a league or something like that, but you're still showing up to the games. You're still watching the games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, you're not really protesting anything,
yeah.
are you? Now, you affect their money. You stop going to games.
Mm-hmm.
You stop purchasing packages of games. That's where they start noticing.
Yep. And if you find a lot of people that agree with you, wow, you can actually change some things. Yeah.
Yep. And that's for anything in life.
Anything.
You start attacking people's money, that's when they start paying attention.
They do pay attention.
Number four on this list is a three-way tie, and it's all essentially the same thing. Basically, African-American, Latino, Jewish people, like, really tired of these stereotypes. The gang argument kind of thing, or the broken and dispute of, like, kind of viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't on the list, but one of the things that one of my best friends, Will, being a stand-up comedian, you hear this from a lot of the stand-up comedy world. They're so tired of black people do this, white people do this. Like, they're tired. They're done with it. Like, comedians are done with it, let alone audiences are tired of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I heard that in 82, man.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
yeah, it was funny then, not so much funny anymore.
It's, like, changed quite a bit.
You want to tell why the chicken crossed the road, too? Like, you wanted to throw that one there? Or you want to do any knock-knock jokes? I mean, it's not just that it's tired stereotypes.
Yeah.
It's not also, it's just not entertaining. entertaining either.
By the way, thanks for giving away my whole act.
I'm sorry,
Seth. My knock-knock jokes and my chicken. Yeah, come on, man.
You got to come up with a new type five. Type five. You got to have a type five for your stand-up comedian. Let's see here. Number three on the list, foreign characters unable to speak English for comedic purposes.
That one should have been a long time ago. That one should have been gone a long time ago.
Women being depicted as weak, too sensitive, always crying. That is number two on the list.
Yeah.
And women being overly sexualized by male characters is number one with a bullet on this list. Huge.
Like yes.
That one, men, women, 18 to 35, everybody's tired of that one.
Can we, as a society, can we grow up a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Can we just grow up a little bit about it? It seems, you know, we're... Hollywood, and again, here goes Hollywood again. Hollywood for so long has for some reason felt that we need to treat women like we're all 18-year-old, you know, heterosexual males, you know, like in Heat. And it's like, no.
Right.
It's not a real depiction of life, first of all.
It's the balance in society that men have to relearn or learn at all as far as how treating women. Like, this is one of those things, whether it's mansplaining or it's being overprotective or any of these things or basically not listening. As simple as that. There's a lot of things that take work that need to be done. We need to rewire our brains and rewire society about 100%. How we approach them. I will say, though, I look forward to a time when, like, that character can be a thing and it's not tired. It's not old.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a damsel in distress.
No.
That's a story plot.
Yep.
That's a line. It's not so much about her being a woman as it is somebody in distress.
Exactly.
But about that, about it being a person in distress, not a man, not a woman, like just a person in distress.
Exactly.
Like that storyline.
Yeah.
That's as old as literally film.
Right.
Like one of the first films is the woman tied on the train tracks and the guy in the villain with the long mustache.
Pearls of Pauline. Yes. Yeah.
Like that storyline's been done and done and done, but it's not going anywhere. I think it just needs to grow. It needs to evolve.
Yeah.
Where it's not just the damsel in distress. It's just somebody in distress.
Right. I mean, and that's your point is so, so well taken. Let's make sure we know what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Let's make our terms. Let's define our terms here. It's not necessarily the story plot, the storylines, the plot lines and everything like that. Yeah. It's how they were traditionally portrayed. It's like, okay, we all have housework to do. Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone who lives in a dwelling has to clean the dishes, has to do certain things. And that's important work. It doesn't mean one person has to do it. It doesn't have to be the woman, but it still has to get done. So there's nothing wrong with the work. Mm. It's our expectations. It's who needs, you know, it's like we say, one person has to do it. No. That doesn't matter. That part doesn't matter.
Is there any movie stereotypes you're tired of that you can think of off the top of your head?
Because I watch Marvel movies. I like Marvel movies a lot. they've gotten better at it. They still have kind of a villain problem.
Yeah.
Because they're villains. A lot of them are, like you said, the mustache twirlers.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like we're evil because we're evil.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not an explanation.
No.
You're just because you want to do bad things or they just do the classic. I want to rule the world. Boring.
Yeah.
You know, how is that a motivation? I want to be sympathetic to the villain in the sense that, I understand where this person is coming from.
I really do admire that writing when you can write a character like a Joker in The Dark Knight or a Killmonger in Black Panther or something. I hear you. I find that even more than making that character mean more than just your tired old villain, you know,
right.
That kind of thing.
The meme, you know, Thanos was right.
Yeah.
Came back from after, Infinity War. And it's like, well, he could say, you know, some of the things he said, you know, might make sense, you know, we don't have enough resources or whatever. Now you can say you're evil because the way you're doing it is awful, know. But again, you can sympathize with, or at least understand, maybe not sympathize, but you can understand where they're coming from.
Mine is an honorable mention, and keep in mind I'm an 80s kid where this was king, but they're still doing this where these movies are never, nothing's under 2 hours anymore. No movie being released in major theaters is under 2 hours.
Yeah.
So they're all long, and 2.5 hours and 20 minutes of the movie is basically a montage. It's basically just a montage. Like, fill the script. Like, if you can't fill a 2-hour movie, don't make a 2-hour movie. Like, I don't need a montage in every single movie, a musical montage. I don't need it.
This is why the movies that I enjoy the most are from the 1930s to the 1950s, because they didn't do that.
They didn't waste time.
The movies were like an hour to between an hour and an hour and a half. Now, there were some movies that were longer, but those were the exception. Yeah. You get the Wizard of Oz. Wow, that's a long movie.
Right, right.
But these were like hour and a half movies, anywhere between there. And they didn't – they had – because a lot of them, they didn't have the time or the budget to make anything bigger. So it's like, we need essentials. The story, we need to do this, this, and this, and that's it. We can't do anything else.
One of my favorite things in the world is sitting down and watching a movie I've been dying to watch, or a TV show I've been dying to watch, and being able to, with my brain, dissect every little thing from the editing to the acting to the costumes and all that. I love it. I'm tired of the three-hour movie. I'm tired of it. Make a two-hour movie. Make it tight. Make it good. And there you go. These every director now has to make a two-and-a-half-hour movie. Like, if you can fill the time, sure. Okay, if you can make Citizen Kane, if you can make a Godfather 2 or something, yeah, give me 2 hours. Give me two and a half. I'll sit through the whole thing. If you can't fill the time, if you need to fill the time with montages and things, no. I'm tired of it. That's enough. We'll get out of there on that. We'll go ahead and get to Melissa's news. We'll come back with some That Ain't Right stories and good stories of the day on Mornings on WFHR. Welcome back, everybody. It's a family thing around here at WFHR. Seth and James here with you. Got the whole team in studio at this time of day. Love that. Like having everybody in the house. It's fun. We say good morning to our staff and say good morning to all of you out there, the best listeners in the radio. Thanks for joining us. 9:43 on the clock, and we got a That Ain't Right story here. Although it's not necessarily written as one, to me it kind of is.
Okay.
If this is true, guys don't get to laugh at anybody anymore for horoscopes and all those things.
Okay.
We tend to be usually stereotypically the ones that make fun of that stuff or don't take it too seriously.
Speaking
and everything.
Of stereotypes, right?
Yeah. Right, right. A new study in the Netherlands found men are more likely to make risky financial moves after they get a good news from a fortune teller or any sort of version of that. Men are almost like overwhelmingly more inclined to do something. Like, fortune teller tells me I'm about to make a bunch of money. Moments later, I'm on Wall Street and I like sell, you know, and all that and everything. 700 people received good, bad, or neutral fortunes about their future financial successes, then had to answer a bunch of questions about how willing they'd be to risk their money for a big payoff.
Okay.
Men who'd been told that financial success was in the future were more willing to take chances with money, and a second experiment showed they were more willing to gamble, too.
Ooh!
If even it even happened with guys who said they didn't believe in fortune tellers at all, but then when they were told by a fortune teller that they were going to make a bunch of money, apparently, like you know, emptied the bank account.
Wow!
Yeah,
but that wow. I think that just goes to our desire to make the quick and easy score, right? It's one of those things that I think is pretty, and I don't say just men in general, maybe more so, but. The chance of, you know, the brass ring and here I am going to go and make money without doing anything, right? It's the easy money, the lottery kind of thing.
This article, in fact, kind of proves something I've been talking about on the air for a very long time. Every man has a little bit of Homer Simpson in them. Every man has a little Homer in him.
Why else would he be so beloved? We all see a little Homer Simpson in each one of us, right?
That get-rich-quick scheme. It's
always there.
I'm going to steal the grease from the school kitchen and sell grease on the side kind of bit. Like this kind of thing that you would never find a woman like, and I don't care if I sound stereotypical here. I'm standing on this one. This is one of the few stereotypes I will stand on. And I was raised by a feminist.
Yes.
I don't believe you'll ever see a woman doing that, but you will see a lot of guys doing that kind of thing.
And you know, the amazing thing is a get rich quick scheme. It's supposed to be one of those. It's like, well, I don't have to do. They end up spending more time
and effort
on these harebrained schemes than they would if they just went out and worked or did something for it. Right.
Now, just so people don't think I'm too sexist here, as I'm saying all that about women, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to talk a little negatively.
Let's do it. All right.
Because this is a true that ain't right story. A 30-year-old woman in Spain sent her mother a terrifying video of herself being held hostage.
Oh, my goodness.
She was blindfolded and all these things. They went all out. She says she had been kidnapped and doesn't know why. And if the mother doesn't, a mother says anything to the police, et cetera, that whole storyline is, again, old storylines.
Yep, yeah.
But this was all fake. It was all a fake thing that she was doing to try to get money out of her mother.
Wow. Oh, man.
The woman and four accomplices were arrested for trying to extort $50,000 from the woman's mother. The mother did pay, but somehow the authorities caught wind of it and started investigating. And, you know, she got her money back and everything. They found that the woman had already been conned. The woman had already conned her mother three other times in a similar scheme.
Wow.
Those three times, she got a total of $45,000 from that, so she was going for the big payoff with this final one.
Jeez.
When the police found her, she and her accomplices were living up at a casino. And so they caught her, and obviously she's not going to get away with this and everything, or her accomplices. Yeah, that ain't right.
This is a very that ain't right story.
It is one of the bigger that ain't right stories we'll ever do.
Couldn't it? So, you know, we don't know anything about the family dynamics here.
Yeah.
But, so you couldn't just ask?
You're right.
It's like, Mom, you know, I'm not doing so well. I gotta, you know. The thing that gets me on that is accomplices, though. I wonder if there was a little, like, you know, your mom's got a lot of money. Let's, you know, let's see if we can get some of that out of her kind of thing. I don't know. There's not enough information from that story. But still, it's not to absolve her at all because she played along with it. Right, so she's very guilty of doing that. Wow. That's just that. So many levels of that ain't right on this one. Wow. Yeah.
Just bad. That's bad.
It's just bad. All around bad.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll have some more conversation on Mornings on WFHR. Welcome back to Mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio. Seth and James here with you at 9:52 on the clock. One more that ain't right story for you. And I had to do this one because for those that don't know, Seth has a Swiss heritage in him.
As I do.
Does my oldest best friend, Chris. Mm-hmm. I happen to have a couple of Swiss people in my life. And I see this story and I think of you guys. Swiss realtor rolls out coffee balls to replace capsules.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I don't know about this one. We go to Berlin, where a Swiss realtor, Migros, said Tuesday that it is launching a coffee-making system designed to replace capsules that produce thousands of tons of water of waste worldwide each year. So
okay, that's a good
for
good,
a very good place.
Yeah, it's very good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The corporation said its cyclical capsules, described as coffee balls, are fully compostable.
Yes, compostable. Very good.
Unlike the plastic and aluminum containers popularized by its rival Nestea and other brand Nespresso brands.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's a great thing.
That's a good thing.
That's certainly a great thing. Coffee balls. No.
Terrible
no,
name.
No, terrible name.
Terrible marketing.
Terrible name. Yeah. I don't feel like I don't. I have no. I love coffee.
Yeah.
I can't imagine my day without coffee in it. I shake thinking of not getting coffee. But I'll be dang if I'm ever taking something called coffee balls. Sorry, not
a
doing
little
it.
Rethink, guys. A little rethink on the branding. Yeah.
Might need to redo that one. may need you and the guys who named the Washington team the Commanders. You guys need to get together and rework this.
Let's work this. So can we workshop that? Let's blue sky this, okay, everyone? Let's spitball a little bit.
I really wanted. You know, we're trying to help you out here.
Yeah, we are.
That ain't going to end well. I don't feel like that's a really good idea. We go to some good stories of the day now. Some guy just returned a book to the library in Lincoln, Nebraska that was over 14,000 days overdue.
Yes, I love these stories.
He checked it out in 1983, so 39 years ago. Along with the book, he wrote a check for $58 to cover the late fees.
Only 58. What a bargain.
Yeah. And
what
this,
a bargain.
You know, this speaks to what libraries do in almost every community in America. And the idea that people be a good story to the library.
Yeah.
Return your books, not only on time, but in good shape. Like a lot of times libraries, not a lot of times, every time, libraries have got to pay for that out of their own pocket.
Yeah.
And to me, one of the lamest things you can do in life is getting items like that, free items. It's the same thing as if you borrow something from a friend and don't return it in a good amount of time something. Like, that's just the definition of unclassy.
I have to say I'm guilty of doing that more than I should. But I also see if I get fines, I'm like, donation to the library.
I'm not as guilty about the fine holding a book late as I have had times in my life where I have borrowed something and kept it too long, probably. This back when we used to trade DVDs, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Now, I got a lot better about that.
Yeah.
Having that said, I am currently borrowing a vehicle from our GM. And I told him I'd have it for like a week or so, and I'm still borrowing.
Well, you're still looking for your own vehicle, so that's kind of, it's all good.
Thank you once again to Chuck. Yes. Shout out, Chuck. A paddle boater in Massachusetts recently lost her iPhone when she dropped it in the ocean. But then someone in a scuba diving class found it the next day just by accident.
In the entire ocean.
That's crazy.
Wow. How does that happen? I'm flabbergasted.
She herself could have went looking for it in scuba gear. Never found it.
Yeah.
But this person who had no clue. Yeah. That's awesome. I like
truth
that
is stranger than fiction.
It's very, very true. And it's never too late to go back to school. A 48-year-old in Canada got expelled from high school and never graduated. But he remedied this last year and just started his first semester at the University of British Columbia.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
That's really cool.
That is a great story.
He's studying art history and anthropology.
Whoa.
So not the most employable majors you could pick up, but still, at this point in his life, he probably already has a steady job.
That's not a easy combination either.
No.
He's challenging himself. Good on you, man.
But for him, it makes sense. He's a member of a native tribe in Canada and plans to work at a museum curating Indigenous art.
Perfect. Oh, that's so great.
That makes it, to me...
all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and even cooler, you know? I mean, that's so darn cool. That is really unique. And it just reminds me to spin this to our current, you know, our local audience and everything, whether it's mid-state or any university or anything... Everybody I encourage to continue their education. Literally, everybody listening out there. There is something that interests you.
It doesn't
have to be a degree. It doesn't have to be something that you're going to make a living off of. Now, I encourage you, if that's the case, I always wanted to be a beautician. Well, go to mid-state. Go ahead and be a beautician then. But I'm more looking at the people that just like to learn. And and our brains need it. Our brains need exercise. They need work. And the more that you like to learn, the more healthier your brain is. And the science shows that Alzheimer's, dementia, they're less likely to happen to a brain that loves to continue to learn.
And
that
works. Like you said, exercise.
Itself.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's fun or easy always, but you do it. You want, I mean, I know I want to have a conscious brain as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, me too.
So doing those kind of things, just like stepping back from the thing I love outside of my children and the thing I love most in this world, acting, pulling myself away from that, mental health, taking care of your body, taking care of your brain. These are the things we need to do more. You can do that in a fun way, just by learning. Like, you want to take a basket weaving class, do it.
Do it.
You know, no matter what we're talking about here, be like this guy. It is accessible to
everybody.
So many
great stories of that,
I don't think that there's I don't think there's a lot of things in life we can say this with, but whether you are 9 or 99, you can learn. You can grow.
You can,
you know, and I think that's pretty cool
it's
about
one of those
the human
things
brain.
That, one of those things that you always say, James, the old thing, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can learn until right up till the end. So
Does the dog want to learn?
Yep.
If the dog wants to learn, it doesn't matter if it's 1 or 10.
Yep.
It's going to pick up the trick.
You got it.
We're no different. Human beings are no different. You tell me dogs can do something we can't other than licking themselves?
You had to bring that up, didn't you? You had to bring it up.
I had to go blue. We hope you guys have a fantastic day out there. We encourage you to be the good story of the day and send us your local good stories of the day. James at WFHR, really any of our staff, send them to it and we'll get them to you.
Yes.
Seth will be with us again tomorrow.
I will be back.
And can I
get rid of me?
We are welcoming in Brad Jansen as we got one more FRM Friday of the season.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Brad's also going to be kind of a preview for us of FRM Fest coming up this Saturday, which we'll will, of course, I'll be there emceeing, and our sister station, WIRI, will be down there broadcasting live and direct.
Yep, from 5 to 8, I'll be on the airwaves getting interviews and listening to some music.
It's going to be a fun time. We're looking forward to it. Be good to each other. You guys take care and stick around for Morning Magazine right here on
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.